Well, hello, dads, and welcome to the Dad Nation podcast. Excited to be here. This is October 2023, and I am out of the Dad Camp headquarters studio, but I am excitedly in the state, the great state, or country, should we say, of Montana, in the Unspoken Word home podcast with my great friend Josiah and my other great friend Alex Falder, as we are just wrapping up a weekend of Dad Camp here in Montana. And we thought, let's make this tradition, because it's 1 year ago that we shot or recorded an episode here in this studio. And so we're back. We're going to do it again, and we're going to actually start some new material like we did last year. We kicked off a new conversation, and we're going to do that again. But this this podcast is an extension of a ministry called Dad Camp. We are on mission to build stronger fathers who build stronger children. We have a dream to see a world where every family has a great dad, but we just want this to be a source of encouragement to every father out there who might listen, and we hope that what we say here as we talk amongst ourselves will be an encouragement to you. And so I just want to quickly reintroduce these two friends of mine that joined us last year here on the Dad Nation podcast. But Alex Falder has just been a longtime friend. We met in Indiana many years ago. Doesn't seem like many years ago, Alex.
It was over 10 years ago.
But it's double-digit years, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it was like 11 years ago.
Yeah, our beards have got grayer.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope we've got a little wiser.
A little wiser.
But you abandoned me and moved to Montana?
That's right. Yep, I had to go.
You've been here for how long?
I've been here for 6 years. And wow. I'm never leaving Montana, brother.
Okay. I guess that means it's...
Yeah, and I'm thankful for that.
Yeah, you stole him, Josiah.
Oh, yeah. I'm keeping him here.
Alex is here. He is a pastor with Harvest Church here in the Billings, Montana area, and he has been a huge part of helping us grow the Dad Camp ministry here in Montana. We'll talk a little bit about that later, but just thankful for his friendship and just leadership in my life, and excited to have you back for another round of the Dad Nation podcast.
Yeah, love being on here.
And then we have Josiah, the man, the myth, the legend. You know, you did your little war cry call. I remember now that I'm just sitting here looking at you.
Oh, it was like a MC call.
Yeah, like can you bring that back?
Okay, you want me to do like I did last year?
Yeah, well, let's
Dad Camp. Hey.
Yeah. Like I can't do that.
Okay.
Alex, can you try?
I can't. I mean, Dad Camp, you!
Okay.
Hey, that was good. I like that, though, yo.
Okay.
Hey, you know,
yeah,
urban.
I'm not even. After that, I'm not even going to try. Yeah, we got DK here in studio, too, in the background, and yeah, he's cracking us up. He's actually, yeah. He's almost falling out of the chair he's sitting in right now.
Yeah, I'm surprised I still got a voice after that one.
Yeah. Yep. And, you just did a whole full weekend of Guerrilla Wars, too. Oh, yeah, alongside, we did that together.
Yeah,
it was very
fun,
Josiah.
That was really fun.
Good stuff. So, question of the day. We've gotten a little bit of a habit me and Matt have over the past several months of, I just kind of ask him a question of the day or question of the month, maybe it's would be the more appropriate way to put this. So, with us being here in Montana and you two living here in this great state, why should someone that's listening that's never been to Montana... Why? What's something that you could tell them there's a reason to visit Montana that maybe they wouldn't know or think about already?
Oh, man. Well, I think just being surrounded by the mountains, being in it, no cell phone coverage, but there's a peace in the mountains that you can only get here. And, you know, there you feel small when you're in the valley of... you know, huge 12,000 feet peaks around. And so it's pretty special to be in that environment. We had a couple dads from Indiana this weekend, and they were just kind of in awe of what was going on around them. Beautiful.
Yeah. I heard that one of the daughters of one of these dads, she's actually never really seen a mountain.
A mountain.
Oh, wow.
So
a mountain. Huh?
Yeah, that we saw. Yeah. We heard that.
And plus, there's bears.
Oh yeah,
bears and mountain lions. I mean, so you're kind of there's that fight or flight kind of survival instinct that kicks in when you get here. It's good. It's good for your
unless
blood.
Unless you're Josiah, there's bears running from him.
Yeah.
No, he's probably looking at me and saying, oh, there's like dinner, breakfast, lunch.
And
there's multiple meals, right?
Yeah. So we did a cold plunge, a couple of the guys, in a stream, and it was 46 degrees.
I happened to see a video of this about 2 hours ago.
Yeah, 46-degree plunge for 5.5 minutes.
Oh.
It was exhilarating.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you guys didn't sound like it was very exhilarating. I can tell you that.
Yeah, we did. It was awesome.
Squealing like
so
a little
you stayed
girl.
Stayed in for 5 minutes.
5.5 minutes.
Oh, that's good. That's
just
good for your
just
muscles.
Right before you go into hypothermia.
Yeah.
And then your body, you're like, have a great day.
Yeah.
This is a reason to come to Montana.
For sure.
The tourism industry is growing. You're on Alex's recommendation right here. Josiah, how about you?
For sure. I mean, mine's biased. You know, there's a lot of Native American tribes here in Montana, and there's a lot of, you can come here and learn about culture, the Native American culture. There's still a lot of the languages being spoken here and a lot of the culture awesome. Being practiced.
You know how many different tribes there are?
So originally there is, you know, like 12 federally recognized tribes in Montana placed on reservations. But in my previous work in suicide prevention, I worked closely with the school district here in Bellings, and they said that on any given year, there were 70 to 90 federally recognized tribes represented in the school system. So that means, like, tribes from all over the U.S. are living and going,
okay,
working.
So my ignorance would say I didn't even know there were that many tribes at all.
Oh, yeah. There's, like, there's about 550-something federally recognized tribes.
Wow.
Oh, 576.
You've been corrected.
I've been corrected, yeah.
576 federally recognized tribes.
Mm-hmm. And here in Montana, December 2021, the Little Shell Tribe was just now federally recognized as a tribal nation.
Wow.
No.
So that's awesome. We've been blessed, you know, that last year too when I was here to be a part of doing a dad camp.
Oh, yeah.
On with you and for one of the tribes, and that was just a really good experience for my wife and I, and mm-hmm. hope to do more of that.
So. Oh, yeah, definitely.
There you go. Come to Montana. It's pretty incredible out here, really, for sure. Lots to see, lots to do. Mm-hmm. Alex will teach you how to fly fish, too. There's a good reason. You may not catch anything, but he'll teach you how to do it.
Oh, we were close. We had about 12 hits, but we just couldn't hook up. Brown trout in 46 degree water.
I'm going to put it. I got to be on that list next time. I've wanted to learn, and you failed to offer that to me yet. So I guess
2024.
Okay,
that's right. We'll go.
All right. So we are coming off a season of Dad Camp where we were we introduced some new content to the dads. And it was a book by we created some content around a book by Andy and Sandra Stanley, and it was called the book's called Parenting. Very a unique title, mm-hmm. You know, Parenting. So pretty boring title, but not a boring book. I've been had the privilege of leading Dad Camp now for this is our 18th season, and I would say. I've read a lot of different resources on fatherhood and parenting, and I would say like this particular resource quickly went into my top three, for sure, top three. Maybe even number one, but I would say just top three, safely top three, and I just felt like we have to put this in the hands of as many dads as we can this year because of just the solid content, what I call parenting gold that's in there. So we're going to shift the conversation. We've been in this series, The Five Marks of a Man, that we've been doing for the past year. But we thought, you know what, this would be a great way for dad camp guys to go deeper. And if you're not a dad camp guy, just listening to be encouraged as a father, it's a great resource. So I'd encourage you to go get it. But also, just as you're listening, there's going to be a lot of good stuff that we're going to be talking about. So we're going to be kind of hanging out on this for the next several months, I think, just taking a little one step deeper. So the book has a subtitle. I'm going to grab it here. And it's the, you know, the title's called Parenting, and then the subtitle is Getting It Right. And he begins the book by asking the question, are you getting it right as a dad, as a mom, because this book isn't written just for dads, are you getting it right? And he kind of prefaces it with, it's kind of a terrifying question. Mm. If you think about it as a dad, like, am I getting this fatherhood thing right? And that kind of sets you up for thinking about, am I getting it right? Am I not? What is it anyways? And so he kind of then makes the point that if we don't decide as dads ahead of time what our it is, that something or someone will choose it for us. And so with that, he says often that in the world we live in, and I would, you know, let you guys jump in now, we often are so busy parenting that we don't know what we're actually parenting towards or for. And, you know, I find that as I'm in the midst of parenthood, or now, even though I'm an empty nester, just watching my friends, like, we're so busy getting our kids to this event, that sporting event, from this thing to that thing, that we're often just reacting more than creating or going somewhere intentionally. You guys are I'm a little bit further down the road as my kids are a little bit older. When you guys think about that and your season of parenting, agree, disagree, you know, this busyness, is it a big factor for you guys? Is it a challenge? As you've thought about having an it as far as like a goal, a desire of where you want to lead your family towards, have you ever had an it? And yeah, jump in. Yeah. Thoughts.
So just that part was really profound to me. I guess it just really hit me like a ton of bricks when we started reading the book today. I mean, yesterday. During dad camp and during that breakout session, and I started thinking, I was like, okay, like when my kids, maybe about 4 or 5 years ago, my it was like, get them to college, get them to play college basketball or college sports so that I can get that free scholarship or that scholarship and play sports and go to college and get a degree and then go on to their career. And then that evolved into like, no, that can't be my it. That can't be it. I gotta be like, so it evolved into, I got to help them develop their talent, identify their talents, and how are they going to use those talents to help others? Yep. And that's where it's been until I opened up this book, and I was like, it's got to be bigger than that. It's got to be more mm-hmm. than that.
Mm-hmm. So you're processing that.
Yeah.
Working on that.
Mm-hmm.
Alex?
I would, if I were honest, I think my it was, if I can have kids that have the right behavior and can kind of walk through life being semi-successful and just kind of like what I thought a kid should look like, or a good behaving kind person, and I think this year tweaked that a little bit, and it was good timing for this book because it helped me realize that I'm not parenting with the relationship in mind. I'm parenting hoping that they'll behave a certain way.
Yep.
And then that would make me a good parent. Like if they turn out like this, then I did a good job. And I think it showed me how I missed some things along the way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I know, I would say Bridget and I, that's my wife's name, we didn't have, I would say, maybe early on, an identified it. But I would say that we were pretty consistently parenting towards, similar to what you said, Alex, like a character, integrity kind of goal, that our kids would just develop good character. Integrity was always a word that my dad was big on. I think that got passed into me, like, be a man of your word, be the same guy tomorrow as you are, you know, be the same guy on Sunday as you are on Monday and Tuesday, and authenticity. Mm. My wife, character values was huge. So I think while we didn't maybe specify a specific it, we kind of had that it. And then a few years ago, we developed a family vision for our family, and we created some different thoughts, and really our big word for our family was surrendered. And we kind of looked at Joshua. I think it's Joshua 24:15, if I'm remembering right. But just the verse, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Mm. And we just wanted that to be like, you know, an overarching kind of verse. And that was our it. Like, as we just wanted, as parents, we wanted our kids in the same way to have a relationship with Christ, that, and we would just serve the Lord. We would be surrendered to whatever God would ask us to do, that we would live that as parents, as husband and wife, but that would, you know, our kids would, you know, someday that they would choose that for themselves. And so, you know, while we didn't have maybe an it written down, that kind of became our it in recent years. And but in the book, this is, and I'll let you guys jump in here. This was the Stanley's it, and it may not sound that profound, but it really is when you really kind of dig below the surface. But their it was kids who enjoy being with us and with each other, even when they no longer have to be. Mm. Kids who enjoy being with us and with each other, even when they no longer have to be. And so once they identified that, then everything they did as parents was with the idea of, like, they parented with the relationship in mind. With Alex, you've already mentioned that. Andy said, if it was good for the relationship, it was good. If it was not good for the relationship, it became a thou shalt not in their home. And so everything, you know, the spirit, the idea of parenting became 100% relational and not on behavior or performance. It was purely relational. When you guys read that this it was like kids who enjoy being with us, because you guys, you know, you're in a season of parenting where your kids haven't left the house yet, mm-hmm. Where the Stanleys, they have, mine have, but this became their it. How did that make you feel when you read that? Kids who enjoy being with us and with each other, even when they no longer have to be.
I think right away for me, I started thinking about myself and my relationship with my parents. And I was like, okay, like, I enjoyed being with them, but then I'm focused, like, on my career and then my family here. And they live, you know, about 45 miles outside of town here out in the country. But I rarely go out there, you know. So I started thinking about myself, and I was like, do I enjoy being around my folks, my parents? Okay. I do, but I was just like, I'm just, like, focused right now on my own family, so... I don't know. I guess I'm still pondering that question. It just made me think about myself. But as far as my kids, you know, it's like, yeah, I want that too.
Yeah.
I definitely want that. Yeah. You know?
And, you know, I think his big point here is, like, what we do now as dads and as parents in these days when our kids were under our roof is will determine, you know, that later season in life as whether they'll choose to be with you or not. Because when they no longer have to be, are they gonna call? Are they gonna invite you over? Are they gonna want to be around? Are they gonna move as far away from you as possible? You know, yeah. It's like, I can't wait to get out of this house. Or is it gonna be like, I don't want to leave home because home is good, home is safe, home is everything. What do you think of this parenting it?
So there was two things that came up when I first read it. I thought, so the plan is I just want my kids to like me.
Yeah.
The end of this. Mm. And so I kind of wrestled with that a little bit. Yep. And then it kind of occurred to me that my deep desire, when I see another family that have that, I get hope. I get, I'm like, man, how'd they do that? How did they get their family to really connect after they've left the house?
Yep.
And so there's this desire there. And then when I see a family that doesn't have it, I start to lose hope, go. Like, man, I hope all this has some fruit at the end of it.
Yep.
So my deep desire was triggered by that. And then the second piece, I came to this conclusion after I wrestled with the book a little bit, that's what God wants for us, is to choose him and enjoy him. And
there you go.
There's a link there. It's like, oh, well, that's God's plan too. So it's not just a selfish, like, I want him to like me. But it really is this grand plan of the scriptures from cover to cover is that God wants to be in relationship with us and enjoy us, and us enjoy him. And he's done everything to make that possible.
Yeah. And, you know, I think another strong piece of that is, same with, you know, God's desire and God's design for us in that relationship thing, and for as a parent, beyond just like wanting them to like us, but the moment we are out of relationship, we lose our influence. And so, you know, if you want to maintain influence with your kids, which, you know, hopefully that's what you want, be able to continue to build into them, you have to be in relationship, healthy relationship. And so, you know, you lose relationship, you lose influence. And so if there's one thing we want to have as parents, as no matter how old or young our kids are, I think it's to have influence. And so to be, and so the relationship is absolutely key and vital. So good, yeah. The more you dig into this. He brought up, which I thought was really interesting, an idea called the law of the harvest. And that he says, you know, we as parents can beat ourselves up sometimes because, you know, we're in a season where maybe our kids aren't responding or making the choices that we would hope they would make. And there's a season maybe as in their high school years, middle school years, whenever, even when they're younger, where we feel frustrated. We're like, what, are we doing something wrong? Is this working? Why? And he said, you know, hey, time out, push the pause button. Hang in there, focus on that relationship. But this law of the harvest is, like he says, don't grade your parenting until the crop comes in. And in his opinion, that crop comes in around, you know, your early mid-20s kind of time for it. Because he also says even perfect parents are no match for the lack of frontal lobe development, yeah. Which I thought was great, because that's one thing I tell my kids, would used to tell my kids all the time, like, I know you think I'm crazy. I know you think I'm being ridiculous, but you guys need to understand that your frontal lobes aren't developed yet, and mine is. So I just reason, I think things through better than you, and you guys can argue with me all you want, but that's just facts are facts. I used to get so frustrated with me when I would say that, but it's, you know, it's true, you know. And so that, you know, our frontal lobes aren't fully developed by that mid-20s. But as you guys heard that, thought about the law of the harvest. Thoughts, you know, he said, you know, we can't, you know, parenting isn't like cramming for a test. You know, we can't just cram the night before and it's just going to work out. You know, parenting is a journey. We plant, you know, we water, we wait, you know, and it's a long process. And so what you're doing now, the seeds you're planting now, the watering and the fertilization, all those things that you're doing now, you know, there'll be fruit that will come of it, but it's not just going to happen. You know, it's a process. And so I thought that was some great encouragement, but a good reminder to us when we're in this season, when it's hard, to not grade ourselves in this season, to hang in there. How did that make you guys feel as dads of high schoolers, of dads, yeah, of middle schoolers? You know, how did that come across?
Yeah, so I got a freshman now in high school, and I feel like it's been bittersweet, you know, watching my little buddy, you know, get growing into his man body, and, you know, he's starting to have his independence. And when we came on that part of the book and that harvest, I was like, okay, that process is starting now, because he's starting to pull away and he's starting to, you know, not test his boundaries, but just, you know, see how far he can go. Sure. You know, he just did driver's ed. So he's like, every time we got to go somewhere, he's like, can I drive? Can I drive? Can I drive? And he's like, can I just go to the store real quick? And I was like, no, you got a permit. You know, you got to wait until you actually have your license. So, but I think about, you know, then my mind just starts going into the future. It's like, you know, is he going to come back? You know, he's getting that independence now, yep, but is he going to want to be around dad, you know, when he's, you know, got his college degree and starts his own family? I guess that's where I've been thinking. So this was like right on point when we read it this weekend. And I was just like, okay. So yeah, just like with sports, you know, you trust the process. You're doing all these drills throughout the preseason or off season, and then come to practice, you're doing these drills, and sometimes we don't understand why we're doing them. Mm-hmm. But come game time, then it's just reaction, boom, reflexes, muscle memory. So that's kind of how I started thinking about it. It was like, okay, I just got to trust the process, you know, trust the Lord, you know, that I'm equipping him to make good choices now. So that, you know, that relationship will still be intact. During that frontal lobe development.
I would agree with you, Josiah. The I wasn't prepared for that 12-year-old, my oldest. She's now almost 17. But when she went through that 12 to 13-year-old, she was transitioning, and I didn't really know what was happening. And it was super painful because it went from she's my buddy, she wants to be everywhere where I'm at, and it's like then you get to this place where it's like, okay, it's time for you to get out of my room. It's no, I don't really want to go with you to those places. And what I was experiencing is I was moving from the training years to the coaching years, which I'm not down in on the field with them. I'm now on the sidelines. Calling some shots, maybe pulling them off the field for a while. We're going sports analogies, but there were these seasons. So it's like 0 to 5 are the discipline years.
Yep.
And then from 6 to 12 are the training years. And then the coaching years through like the teenage piece. And then there's the friendship years, which is kind of what we're talking about.
Getting to that point.
And that, you know, I'm sowing into each stage of that, knowing that, trusting that on the tail end that they're going to be these healthy, functioning adults with that can do relationship well.
Yep. And, you know, I've got one of my best friends, as he read this, he's been part of our teaching team this year, and this was a struggle for him because he's like, you know, my kids are in their mid-20s, early 20s now.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's saying, you know, the law of the harvest is now for my kids. And, you know, for him, his children aren't really where he would hope they would be, especially with their faith. You know, they're one of them or two of them are just right now, like, just not really interested in a relationship with God. And so there's some hurt there. There's some struggle there. There's some, did I do anything wrong? As we talked, I encouraged him, said, look, I think I'm not so sure that the law of the harvest is the same. While I agree with the principle, when that harvest matures, I don't know if it's the same for every family or for every kid. Because everyone's got a different story and a different path, especially when it comes to faith. And so for my friend, you know, when he started having, we started having kids, you know, both he and his wife had a prior marriage where they had children, that was outside of they weren't themselves at a point in their life where they were following God. So that parenting journey and started with those kids in a completely different place where, when they got married and they had a child together and they've raised that daughter under a completely kind of from start to finish, you know, she's been in a kind of a faith-filled, kind of Christ-centered environment that the others weren't from the very beginning. And so I told him, the law of the harvest is still going to be applying here, but you've got to be a little more, just don't beat yourself up. Be patient. Keep hanging in there. Maybe it's going to be 35 years old for those kids or 40, you know. You know, while I agreed with the principle in the book, I was kind of like, as I thought more about it and just talked more with my friends, I'm like, I don't know if it's this 25. We can just like say it comes in around 23, 25. I think it's some relative, like, I don't think, you know, we can put, pinpoint a number there. But the big idea was, parents, if you're in a season where it's just hard right now, don't beat yourself up. Just hang in there. Hang in there. Keep pursuing your kids. Keep encouraging. Keep coaching them. Keep loving them. And even if, you know, there's some rebellion, there's some choices that you're like, just, you know, you're just like, oh, I hate that for you. Like, you're making those choices and there's going to be these consequences. But, hey, law of the harvest, hang in there. I think that was the big kind of thought that he was trying to encourage us with. Another, I thought, important piece in this first chapter was what he called the dad ditch.
The ditch.
The ditch. And he talked about, I think he brought up a mom ditch as well, but, you know, for the sake of what we're talking about, being the dad, you know, this fatherhood-focused kind of podcast, the dad ditch was this idea that if we're not intentional, like oftentimes as dads, we're not intentional. That's a big struggle for us. And when we're not, we tend, especially as our kids get older, we tend to kind of check out. As our kids check out, we're like, okay, if we're sensing they want more space or they want more independence, then we kind of pull back as well. We tend to check out. And, you know, it's often not on purpose. Sometimes we don't even notice it. But when we do check out, we can fall into this dad ditch, because when we check out, it becomes relational. It becomes a relational kind of drift in the relationship that we have with our kids. And as I thought about it, 100%, I have fell into the dad ditch many, many times. You know, busy day at work, and I just want to get home. The dad ditch was an easy place to go to just kind of to check out. Or just when it gets hard, you know what, just kind of be like, kind of give up a little bit, wave my white flag at times and just be, I just want to check out right now. This is just, I don't want to deal with this. What'd you guys think? Dad ditch, been there, not been there?
I would go during that painful process. I'm hurting because I feel like I'm getting hurt by my kids, which is my own issue. But the thing that I was tempted to do was slide into sarcasm. So and that was my checking out.
Okay.
Instead of pressing in, I would go into sarcasm, and sarcasm was this thing that pushed away.
Yep.
You're never drawn into sarcasm. And I felt like I was pushing my kids away, and then I started to pick up their sarcasm. And it's like, oh, man, they're learning that. They're catching that from me. And I'm doing it because I'm not dealing with the hurt or the pain that I'm experiencing as my kids transition. There was a part in the book that I thought was really interesting, and he was saying that as a dad or as a parent, my relational drawbridge is always down. And it's easy when you get hurt by one of your kids to pull that relational drawbridge up and then put something else out there that puts distance between the relationship. And so that was a really good image for me. Yep. Is my relational drawbridge down, meaning that they always have access to me and I'm not pushing them away with other things because I'm hurting. Like, yep. I've got to go deal with that. But for them, I had somebody say this, like, take all the hurt and the pain and take that to God and give all the love and the relationship back to them.
Back to them. And you think about it, if you pull up the drawbridge, where are they going to go? They're going to go into the ditch.
They're going to go somewhere else for that love.
Yep, and that too. Yep. Right. Yeah, he said when we go into these dad ditches and we check out, when we become kind of emotionally unavailable, then he says parenting, we reduce our parenting to just behavior management. And, you know, and that works for a while. It works for a while. And he
until
brought up,
it doesn't.
Until it doesn't.
Yeah.
And as they get older, just, you know, speaking from some experience, that doesn't work real well the older they get. He said, you know, obedience is a means, not an end. He says it's possible. I love this. He said it's possible to raise well-behaved children who don't enjoy being with you or enjoy the company of their siblings, or who are unprepared to leave home, or who leave and rarely return. Like, he's like, you can raise compliant, obedient kids, but they really don't enjoy you or enjoy each other. If you just create this home of compliance and obedience, and like I said, it'll work for a while, but when they get their independence, spread their wings a little bit, it doesn't work too well. And I thought that was a good reminder. Good reminder.
Oh yeah.
Any dad ditch thoughts there, Josiah?
yeah, like what I was thinking about was like you know, I spend all day with my kids, whatever it's their sports or we're, you know, we're going out, we're watching a movie or whatever. And then what I found myself doing was like when we got home, I just go sit in my office or sit in the recliner and just like check out. And like, you know, they come and talk to me and I just like one word answers. And I was doing that and I started feeling bad about it. Like later on, you know, like, you know, you're about to fall asleep and I was like, oh, I was just totally ignoring my kids for the whole evening. Even though I spent like majority of the day with them. There was just that, you know, 2-3 hours before bedtime that I checked out and I wasn't paying attention to them. And I just kind of shrugged them off. And so I started feeling bad about that. So what I started doing was like when we would go do these outings, like go for a walk or hike or, you know, go shoot some hoops somewhere. And then we come back home before we got out of the car. I started saying, OK, when we get inside, I need like a half hour, an hour just to myself. And then you guys can come ask me questions or come talk to me and stuff. But I just need that time for myself to like regroup, chill, relax. You know, maybe watch one of my shows. And I said, then you guys can come and start talking to me again. And when I started doing that, then I didn't stay in that dad ditch.
And so you told them that?
Yeah, I would tell them that. I just need to chill.
I think that's so important there. So you explain, hey, this is just, I need a little time to replenish, kind of refuel my tank.
Yeah.
And I think when your kids see that, they don't then see it as dad's checking out or is not interested in me. You know, he's talked about this, and then if there's consistency with you then following that of being back in the game and present, yeah. Then I think there's, you know, that's so awesome to that you have that connection with them, that you have that conversation with them. They understand that this is a way for you to replenish. You need that space, but then you're going to give them that time that mm-hmm. they deserve versus not having that conversation
yeah.
and just checking out. And they're thinking, Dad's not interested.
Yeah,
Dad doesn't.
And then, like, I was like getting irritated. You know, I was like, I just spent the whole day with you. What else? What other yeah. information do you need? I mean, you know, like, I was just kind of started going down that path.
I've even done it in my work life lately, where I've realized and noticed that if I start my day just in meetings, if I just start right away, like, I am not a good person to work around. Like, I need a couple hours in the morning to just work on things alone, strategic things. I just need some time, my quiet time with the Lord. I need some space, and then I can make myself available and be a way better human being versus, you know. So I've actually started to rebuild my calendar, and I've just, you know, I don't schedule anything those first couple hours, like 6:30 to 8:30, 9 o'clock. I'm just going to be strategically, because I know I'm just going to be a better coworker, a better leader, a better dad, all those things when I refuel my tank with the Lord first, and then just that time that I need. That's how I'm wired. I'm more introverted than extroverted. So something I've learned lately, and I think, and I'm better for it. And so, but that's, so yeah.
Yeah.
I get it.
Oh yeah.
I get it. Couple other things that I thought chapter one, there's so many big kind of ideas in this first chapter. Your children do not have the same relationship with you that you have with them. Your children do not have the same relationship with you that you have with them. Thoughts?
So right away, sorry, I just jumped in right before you bought that. But I'm a coach. I've been coaching youth sports for, you know, 10 years now. And for me, it was like once we're headed to the gym, I got my coach hat on. I understand that I have my coach hat on. And when we get to the field or we get to the gym, I'm barking orders. I'm yelling. I'm trying to motivate. So hiring my voice, I'm yelling around, but to them, to my kids, they still see daddy. And I, in those instances, in those practices, in those games, I've hurt their feelings. Because I thought they understood. Okay, dad has his coach hand. He's coach right now. He's not daddy. But to them, I'm always daddy. And that's what it like highlighted, and it, choked me up. I was like, man, I missed that one. Mm. You know, but moving forward, I can really change that up. And there's probably some amends that need to be made as far as the coaching aspect with my kids.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
I think for me, it really came out in that don't argue with your kids.
Yeah, that was the next thing. Yep, don't argue with your – never argue with your child.
Yeah, because I'm the parent, and I can always double down and win the argument, but I'm not winning anything. I'm breaking the relationship. And so when I'm arguing with my kids, I'm seeing them as a peer or – as I'm going head to head with them, and that's not the relationship that they're experiencing. Nope. So they're experiencing an authority that, you know, I can win the argument. I can say, okay, I'm going to revoke your driving privileges, or I'm going to take away your phone because I pay for it. Or, you know, I can always trump that and win the argument, but I'm not winning anything because I'm using my parent force, but yet I'm not, when I'm arguing, I'm not seeing it as they're the kid and they're experiencing me very different than I'm experiencing them. So it just kind of brought out a dynamic that I think happens, and you don't really notice it until you say, oh, it's not the same relationship.
It's not. Yeah. It's so often. Yeah. He said, if you later, you know, and then there's those moments when, you know, when we realize we were wrong, just then owning it. But don't argue with them. But if you're wrong, own it. You know, he's like, parents aren't always right, but parents are always parents. And because they just, our kids look to us differently than we're looking to them. And so it is a different relationship. It's not the same. You know, he says arguing is for peers, but you're their parent. You're not their peer. And that's not what they're looking to you for.
Yeah, and when I own it, I'm setting the example there of repair.
Yep.
So if I'm repairing the relationship, that's my job, is to repair the relationship. So, of course, I have to own it, even when I'm not feeling like, oh, this is not all my fault. But I still am modeling what repair looks like.
Which, you know, is so huge. He's like parent, parenting with the relationship in mind equips our kids to be good at relationships. So it's like we're modeling it. We're showing them how to bring restoration, how to bring forgiveness into the relationships by owning our size. Hey, we're just dads. We're not perfect, but we're trying our best. But we're going to screw up at times. We're going to say things we don't want to say. We're going to be sarcastic. That's a default of, I think, most of us dads, is the sarcasm thing. And another challenge in here somewhere in this book is this, you know, make your home a sarcasm-free zone. Yeah. There's just no room for sarcasm in the family. And, I mean, that, I think that's probably going to hit a lot of us between the eyes, because so often we default to sarcasm. He does even point out, like, you know, a healthy parent-child relationship is the best predictor of a child's relational success outside the family. And so this is what you see when people that are highly – have a high relational IQ or highly successful in relationships, probably a good chance that relationship they have with their parents was probably a strong one, because that's the best predictor. And so if you want your kids, when they're leaving the house, to be, you know, succeed in the world relationally, you know, this is what it's all about, like modeling this healthy parent-child relationship and helping them see how you repair relationships, how you repair brokenness, how you bring forgiveness, how you bring apology, how you all things. So much stuff in here. I mean, I'm just kind of scrolling through my notes.
One of the things that really stood out to me is when you say you're sorry, to also put an intention. Well, it wasn't my intention, or make an excuse there, or try to get them to understand why you did what you did. He was just saying that's just a way to invalidate that I'm sorry. Yep. And so to just be able to say, I'm sorry for whatever I did, and just stop it there.
Stop it there.
and allows you to kind of own it, and then not force them into I forgive you, or hug me, or let's make it right quick, but just to sit in and allow the kid to respond after you've said you're sorry.
Yeah, I was terrible at this. I can honestly say over the years I read this, I'm like, man, I was terrible, you know, because that apology, and then, you know, how can I make it up to you? That follow-up question, that restitution question. I'm thinking back, you know, even in marriage, you know, apologies are, you know, they're hard, at least for me, because I want to be right.
Yeah.
I want to, you know, and even when I, you know, to your point, you know, even if you are right, you know, I think this intent is irrelevant. Mm-hmm. You know, I might be right, but if that's not how they're receiving it, like, my intentions or what's right or wrong is really irrelevant. It's how they're receiving, how you're communicating something, how you're presenting something, how you're leading something. That's all that really matters there is that, not, you know, your intentions are really irrelevant. So, but as men, we often want to win, you know, we want to win the argument. We want to be right. And, but what that does just breaks relationship. And when we break relationship, we lose influence, and then things get hard. So chapter one is just this setup. And so if you don't have this book, go get it. Read it with your wife if you're married. There's a lot of gold in here. But we're going to be jumping into the next couple of chapters. Alex kind of spoke to it already. We're going to get into these different seasons of parenting. The discipline years, the training years, the coaching years. And then, you know, we'll move into things about, you know, discipline and consequences and how our words are really matter as dads, and how we use our words. And there's going to be a lot of good conversations that are to come. But this is just this big idea of, like, setting up. Do you have an it? So my challenge to you guys would be thinking about, do you have a parenting it? Do you have an end in mind? And I can say that while there, the Stanley's it might sound really simplistic, like, you know, that when your kids are old enough that they'll, you know, to make that choice themselves, that they'll still choose to be with you even when they don't have to be, it really is a profound it. And I'm just entering that phase of life myself. And thankfully, we are in a season where my three adult children, at least right now, are choosing to be with us. And so, and it's rich. It's really rich. They don't have to, but they are. And I am so thankful that they are. I can't imagine, you know, my kids were in a season where, like, Dad, I really, you know, right now, I want my space. I'm going to, don't hear from them a whole lot. But thankfully, it's not that way. And so I just want to encourage you guys, like, what you're doing now is going to set you up for what it's going to look like later. And that'll be another point of conversation with this book as we head in. But, as we wrap up, I want to just give these two guys a chance to, so we're just coming off, a weekend where we did four dad camps, but two of them were in Montana. We've never done two events at the same time in Montana. I got to be a part of both. Did a little driving to get to both, and got a chance to see the guys at both events. But Josiah, you were at the father-daughter weekend.
Yes,
with
sir.
Your daughter. You were helping out as well. Alex, you were with your daughter at middle school dad camp, but obviously, you know, you're directing the show here, and you've put our teams together out here. But just some, how does it feel to have five dad camps this year in Montana? Just what are some of the stories you're hearing? What are you celebrating as we're, I know we're today, like, we're coming off the end of these two events and we're tired, but, oh, yeah. But there's lots to celebrate. Lots to celebrate.
Yeah, I was just kind of thinking about how much work it takes to get dad camp rolling in the year, but then to just see the fruit of it. And I tell dads, this is like a 48-hour defibrillator. It just kind of gets you looking at your own life, and then you're able to give something to your son or daughter that you maybe never got from your own dad. And it's a mismatched experience. It actually rewires the brain.
Yep.
And And so I love watching dads just get it. I had one dad this weekend that just came up to me and said, man, things aren't going well at home, but this has just helped me see some things that I've been missing along the way, and I'm checking in. And God's chasing me down and just kind of tearfully, like, thankful that he got here. And so I see that all the time, like these dads that start changing their life around because of dad camp. Tim Scott was another guy that he's just kind of like getting all kinds of resources in Montana for dad camp. And I'm like, so were you kind of checked in before this in your faith? And he's like, no, that first dad camp helped me see that for the first time that God would want to talk to me.
Oh, wow.
And today we got to witness him baptize his daughter.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's so checked in his faith. He's checked in at dad camp. He's serving with his daughter. Mm. And so, you know, that happened, I think, four years ago where he came to dad camp and God met him in a tangible way, and it changed everything for him.
Mm. It's an amazing testimony of what God's doing at dad camp. A guy I met this weekend at the father-daughter event.
Yeah.
That was with you, Josiah. But first-timer said that Friday he's been he's had some major injuries at work to the point where he still has some ongoing back issues. And so Friday morning, actually, they had him come in and settle on a case that's been going on for years. And he's really been uncertain about what his future looks like, where he's going to go, what he's going to do, and if they're going to move. Just really difficult season in his life. And for whatever reason, he's like, and he goes, I didn't even know if I could come to dad camp with where things are at. But he goes, I signed the papers on Friday, and we jumped in the car. And then Saturday night, he came up to me, put his arm around me, and just said, I just want to thank you. And he was somewhat teary, and he just said, God's revealed to me that I'm in the exact place I need to be, and it's to be a dad, and it's to be really focused and recentering on my family, which I haven't been, and this weekend was exactly what I needed to recenter me and for God to reveal some things to me that just have been really unclear. And another guy just said to what you said about another dad, that just really difficult season at home. I think he was alluding to some marriage struggles, and he just said, we're just in a really hard time, and this couldn't have come at a more perfect time for me, for my relationship with my daughter. And so, again, just very, very thankful. So story after story.
Yeah.
A lot of energy that goes into these things, lot of hard work.
But fruit.
But the fruit that you see.
Yeah, I had one dad yell at me. He's like, why haven't you told me about this sooner? I'm like, I'm sorry, man. I thought maybe you got invited.
Guess this was, for whatever reason, this was the weekend.
This was the weekend.
So
it worked out when I was supposed to.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. We even had some guys flying across the country to come to Montana. So that was exciting. So, you know, if you're not a dad camp guy, can't encourage you enough. You have school-aged kids to get on to dadcamp.org and experience a weekend with your kids that we know will be a weekend you'll never forget. And again, our focus is you. It's not your kids. We want to pour into you, believing that when we pour into you, when God pours into you, that you're going to pour into your family. And that's what Dad Camp is all about. And if you are a Dad Camp guy and you were attended this year and you heard about this thing called the Dad Camp Army, looking at Josiah here wearing his Dad Camp Army shirt, you know, if there's, you've kind of thought, you know, maybe not sure, just want to encourage you. You know, we're on mission to build stronger fathers, to build stronger families. We want to be reaching dads, not just in Montana, not just in Indiana, not just in the U.S., but all over the world. And to do that, we need an army of families saying, yeah, we can get behind this, because what is more important than reaching the heart of a father, knowing that when we reach the heart of a father, we will reach a family. And if you're someone that's a person of faith and taking as many people to heaven with you is important, no better way to take as many people to heaven with you than when we reach the hearts of dads. And so that's what Dad Camp's all about, and that's what the Dad Camp Army is all about. And so if you're like sitting on the fence with that, would encourage you to go to our website. We have a page on our website, Dad Camp Army. You can just reach out, say, connect with me for more information. So we're just excited about where God's taken us, and we just want to invite any and every dad to join this community of dads and families that are on mission together. Last thing I would say, please be in prayer for our Dad Camp team, that in 1 week from the release of this episode, we're going to be in Portugal doing an overnight Dad Camp experience in Portugal with dads and families there. So be praying for our team. Be praying for our partners in Portugal. We've got a group that are traveling down from Germany to witness Dad Camp in Portugal, believing and hoping that perhaps we can put Dad Camp on the calendar in Germany for next year. So be praying for that. And then from Portugal, our team is going to Paris. It's a rough one, guys. You know, Paris and Portugal. But we're gonna suffer there. But Paris. We're gonna get Dad Camp going again in France. And so we just ask for your prayers. These are incredible opportunities for us to reach fathers in other countries. And so be praying for dads. Be praying for families. Be praying for just a revival of dads in those countries where we're seeing just. I would say my experience there has been a lot of dad ditch kind of dads, just kind of checked out, not that engaged, and we're seeing the effects of that. And so we're there to get them out of that ditch and remind them of how much they matter. So I always kind of like to end these podcasts by asking whoever I'm hanging out with, whether it's Matt or whether it's you guys, like final 10%, any last 10% that maybe you're like, hey, I got something else. I want to make sure I share this. Josiah's already like, yeah, I got something. So what you got?
So you mentioned I got this Dad Camp Army shirt on. I just got it this weekend. I put it on this morning, and I just felt like empowered. And then so when we got back to Billings from Clydehurst, from the Boulder Mountains, me and my son Billy, where he volunteered this weekend. I was a camper. We were at the restaurant. And on the back, it says, ask me about Dad Camp.
Yeah.
So this individual came over, this man, and he's like, hey, I'm sorry to interrupt your meal, but the back of your shirt says, ask me about Dad Camp. And I was just like, he's like, so can you tell me about that? So I spent the next 5 minutes just kind of giving a Cliff Notes version of my testimony, telling him about Dad Camp. And he's like, here, take my number. He's like, if you have any links or videos, send them to me. He's like, man, that sounds awesome. And I was like,
that's cool.
Do you have a son that's in first to fifth grade? I said, there's one more Dad Camp next weekend. I said, you can go if you want. He's like, yeah, send me the links. I'll check it out. He's like, it'd be like tough to swing that to make it next weekend. He said, but just from what you told me, he said, I want to go.
Awesome.
And I was just like, I was blown away. I was like, whoa.
Just the shirt works.
Shirt works. All right.
Yeah.
Definitely works.
Good deal. Good deal. So, Dad Camp Army, guys, wear your shirts.
Yeah.
Moral of the story. And have your elevator pitch ready for just like Josiah. I love when I hear him talk about Dad Camp, just how it impacted his life, how it was life-changing for him. And then in turn, what that looks like for him and his family and what it's doing for his community and for his friends. But Alex, you got any final 10%?
So I've been thinking about this relational drawbridge thing. And the piece for me in that is that God always has his relational drawbridge down for us. And we have just full access to him by what he did. Through what Christ did on the cross and through the resurrection. And that's just been a kind of a neat image. And I'm just modeling that as a Christ follower.
Mm.
And I'm just trying to model what God has for us is just that, that relational drawbridge is always down. He's always waiting. The prodigal son story.
Yep.
Just waiting for us to come home.
So encouragement to you guys out there that maybe you're in a season where it's just hard. And hang in there. Keep the welcome mat out. Keep loving. Be patient. Keep encouraging them. It might hurt. It probably will hurt. Probably does hurt. When your kids are making choices that you know aren't the best for them, or maybe it just feels really personal to the types of choices they're making directed towards you. But remember, you're their parent. Hang in there. Don't give up. Keep that relational drawbridge down, believing that as you do, you're modeling God's relationship with us, and believing that as you do that, they'll come back. They'll come back across that bridge and reconnect. But keep the welcome mat out. Keep the drawbridge down.
And God is always fighting on behalf of your kids. Like, he's not absent in that. Yep. His drawbridge is down for them, too.
My friend James said in one of our teachings this year, just, he's always reminded, and he always, when things are hard, that God loves our kids more than we love them. If that's even, like, it's hard to think that as much as we love our kids, but man, God's love for them is even greater. And so when they're struggling, make that your hope. God loves them so, so much, and he's going to take care of them. Trust that. So guys, it's good to be in Montana.
It's good to have you here.
It's good to have you here.
And thank you so much for what you're doing for dads in this state, in this region, for Dad Camp. We're just believing that for growth, for reaching more dads. We believe in you guys, really do. We're just so thankful. So I'm just speaking on behalf of the entire Dad Camp ministry, that you guys are just, that first, like, extended branch. We started this thing in Indiana. It's growing out there, but now there's this arm in Montana. Mm-hmm. You guys are the model. We're learning together. We're growing together. There's times when it can be frustrating, but man, we're keeping the greater vision in mind and seeing the fruit. And you guys are like a model for, hopefully, as I'm going to be in Texas. We're in Pennsylvania, and like, these are, just one step behind Montana, I believe. And so I'm just thankful for your leadership, for hanging in there with us and believing, like we do. When you reach a dad, you reach a family. So thank you for listening to another edition of the Dad Nation podcast. Just, you have what it takes. Remember that, dads. You have what it takes. So go do whatever it takes to be the strongest father you can be. We'll see you again next month. Take care. We'll be right back.